Stand-up comedy is a scene that boasts that anyone is welcome, but that isn't always the case, and people have to fight to get in. Frida De Guise is Australia's only Muslim hijab-wearing comedian, as far as she's aware. Her parents immigrated from Lebanon and she grew up in the Melbourne suburbs. She had a fashion business, run a fashion label, she's worked as a chef, she's now also running a donut shop. Frida also has a husband and four kids because she's not busy enough. She's been on the Australian comedy scene for a few years now and is both trying to break down stereotypes and just tell some seriously funny jokes. And that thing that it's all about, of course, connect. And she's with us from Sydney. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Can you understand my accent?
Yeah, of course.
Kiwi.
I can deal with it. I deal with New Zealanders every day.
I know. I think one of my producers told me you were working on it, though, that you might pull a bit of the old fish and chips out.
That's what I wanted, the fish and chips.
No, you said fish and chips. Fish and chips.
Yeah. Fish and chips.
Fish and chips. Tell me about your day, because none of us can work out how all this happens. So tell me about a typical Friday in the De Guise family.
Well, I've been up since 1:30 in the morning. I went to work at 2 a.m. to make some donuts, and I've left them in the shit, so there's a lot happening down there, and now I've come home, and I'm trying to get my kids ready to go to school.
So you've had no sleep. You've been working all night, and you're trying to get the kids to school and do an interview. This is what I thought life was like.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy old life. It's been a lifelong love, the comedy, Frida. And what was the starting point for you? Like, often people have their favourite TV show or a funny uncle, I don't know. What was the trigger for you?
I think it was I was in the fashion business, and I was, like, growing up I was a very happy child, and in the fashion business I just got so depressed. It was so depressing. And, you know, when things are ugly, you make fun of everything. And I had met side, like, along my life, a lot of people had said, oh, you should become a comedian. And, you know, I heard it a lot. And I would watch stand-up comedy all the time, never ever thinking of being a comedian. And then one day I did this show for Today Tonight. It was, my friend was part of it. I just went as the tag along. But I was making everyone laugh, and then the producer said to me, you should become a comedian. And I said, that's it, I'm doing it. I need to get out of this fashion industry. And I was so in the dumps, like I was so depressed. And it just, yeah, it just made me happy.
I mean, you're
making jokes.
You're so multi-talented. How does anyone just, you know, how does anyone just be in the fashion industry? That is another hugely competitive and challenging area. And was that a really early love and skill as well, obviously?
No. My mum's a dressmaker, and so we've grown up around her making things all the time. But she never wanted us to enter the industry. She said it's an awful industry, and she tried everything to stop us. And I think what I moved to America, like, when I was around 22, and I noticed there was a lot of Islamic clothing stores where I was living. But when I came back to Australia, I realized there was no Islamic clothing stores, and I thought, well, I think I might make the first one. Yeah, and that's how it all started.
So you saw a niche. What's so hard about that industry? What got you so down?
I think it's people just want to, it's so pretentious, and you know, things always go wrong in this industry. Like, things always are late, or, you know, I was importing from America at this stage that when I became a comedian, and, you know, planes were late, dresses wouldn't arrive, and just the way people treated you was just terrible. So yeah, I think I lost the question. But yeah,
no, it's fine. You've been up since half past one. The other love, though, was food. And were you also chefing when you were in the States?
No, but I started cooking, like, really young. And then I started working in during high school. I would go down to, like, the five-star restaurants in the city and ask if I could work for free. So during my school holidays, I would work in all these restaurants. And by the time I finished high school, I had the most amazing resume. So I ended up working at a place in Mario's in Brunswick Street, Fitzroy, which is still there. And then my journey started with food. And I think that's one of my biggest passions is food, like till today. And yeah, the fashion industry was just like, I had just wanted to get out of food because I did it for so long, but then I'm back in food again, like, and it's still a love of mine.
So the comedy, the push and the pull is what? What is it about getting up on stage in particular in the most demanding environment I think there is for comedians? I mean, you're at the mercy, aren't you? And they can they can smell fear. So what was the push and pull for that, for doing that?
I think it was 9/11. 9/11, like, I left Australia and being Muslim was no real big issue. Until 9/11 happened while I was there, and it was like the world changed, like, in minutes. It was, like, instant. And it was like ghost town. And then all of a sudden Muslims became this target. And we had to leave, of course. So we left like 3 months after, me and my mum, we left 3 months after 9/11, and then we came back to Australia, and Australia was never the same as I left it. And then we got pushed into, you ended up hanging out with your people, the Muslims, and you were no longer interacting with non-Muslims, right, because no one accepted you. And then I fell into this depression. I didn't know who I was. I lost my identity, and I think the comedy was a way that I could stand and tell people what I really felt and who I really was. And I'm not that just because I wear a scarf. I'm not that person. So, well, you know, the person that they think we are. So I think comedy was the way to get that, to for people to listen. And I'm not the, like, when I speak, I'm so crude. Like, I swear, like, yeah, I swear so bad. And I'm so Australian, and I'm not Lebanese. Like, I've been raised, you know, my heritage is Lebanese, but, you know, put me in Lebanon, I'm Australian, you know. Put me in Australia, I'm Australian. So, and I wanted to show people that that's who I am and stop bloody judging. And it made me so strong that I could just tell people to get lost, like, piss off, man, you know. So it was really good.
It's permission, isn't it, stand-up? It's a level of permission that you don't normally get to say things you don't normally get to say.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like, you know, you're up there and you're in charge and you get to say whatever you want, and they're going to sit there and listen. And if they boo you, you tell them to shut the hell up. Like, it's so good. It's addictive. It's so good.
It's also connection though, right? And you mentioned that. And what I'm hearing from you is that depression you went into was a disconnect. A disconnect from the relationships and the full kind of human interaction that you'd grown up with. And again, really great stand-up is a powerful connection between that person on stage and the people listening and laughing. And was that empowering too?
Yeah, of course, because the connection for me at the start was, you know, I was basically hitting all the stereotypes, and I was knocking them out of the ballpark, basically, and I was showing them that how stupid their thoughts are. And I was, and people were in shock that I was talking about terrorism and bomb throwing and all this sort of stuff. Like, they couldn't believe that I was mentioning it. They thought, oh, only they spoke about it, and we didn't even know. Like, it's like Ronnie Chang is another comedian that talks about when he came to Australia, he's Asian. He didn't know he was a bad driver. It's like they think that we don't know what they say about us. It's like, we know. And it was like, yeah, showing that that was my connection with them originally, breaking down those walls, you know.
And showing how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, how stupid some of the stuff they say. But I mean, and that just gave me power, more power. And I changed a lot of people's minds. I think I've affected a lot of people. I've had probably over 1,000 messages of people that their mothers, their children have become Muslim, and they stop talking to their kids, or brothers that have stopped talking to their other brothers because they've become Muslim. And because of me, they've rebuilt, you know, their relationships with their families.
You're taking some of the fear and the misperception away. Well, let's talk about your faith and your family's faith life, because you are devout Muslims and you practice your faith fully. So explain to people what it looks like in your family and what it doesn't look like.
Okay, well, we don't get to eat the crackling that you guys always are cooking, and we're like, what the hell is that? So that's no Sunday roast for us. But, you know, we pray 5 times a day. We have Ramadan, which is fasting for a month. You know, I don't know. It's pretty much we live like everybody else, but, you know, our prayer, our mosque is very important. You know, I don't know. I would assume that everyone would probably have some type of prayer, if not some type of faith. I don't know. That's if I'm going to sum it.
So tell me what people...
We're pretty Aussie.
Tell people what people most misunderstand and presume, and would it be that there are limitations on you as a woman and as an Aussie, or limitations on the family? Because I've watched a video of your family in action, and you're as Aussie as it gets. But what do people most misperceive?
I think people assume that we have this great plan to blow up the whole world.
Apart from that one.
And that this is the only thing that I could understand what they think. Right, is probably that, you know, we don't want to connect with non-Muslims, that we only hang out with our own kind. You know, I think they feel that we feel that we're better than everybody, things like that, which are not true, because Lebanese people are so lazy. We can't even be bothered maintaining those things.
We've got to mention your husband here, who is the source of a fair bit of your material. It's not his laziness, I've noted. He's a bit of a hoarder, apparently.
He is, but I have to say, ex-husband. So, yes, I'm a single mother and a donut shop owner and a stand-up comedian and everything else, yes. But... It's so good, though, because that divorce helped me write a complete new show. And, yeah, he was a hoarder, definitely a hoarder. Took me a year to clean the house.
What about the kids, though? I've seen one daughter claim the jokes are all hers.
Oh, yeah, my daughter. She's great. She's amazing. She's probably as sharp as me, if not sharper. She's always like, I'll sit there and start writing a joke and then she'll throw the punchline. I'm like, damn, how does she work that out so fast? She doesn't even know structure. Like, she's amazing, though. She's so funny and quirky. And, yeah, I think they all are. I have a 6-year-old that walks around with a book and a pen and goes, I'm just writing my jokes. Like,
there's another,
they're really funny.
He might have been your 6-year-old, though. Again, just watching this family video, there was... Someone said, is your mum funny? And he said, I don't know, I don't get the jokes. But he's obviously catching up. He's obviously catching up.
That's the 10-year-old. Yeah. He just thinks that I'm really weird and, like, why would I do that? Like, why would you go on stage? He even said to me the other day, because don't you get scared? Like, why do you do it? He's like, you don't get money from it. It's like, yeah, one day.
It's funny. We were talking about what you get from it, right? And the ability to say whatever you want is a big one. I think my favourite gag is the Pauline Hanson one. Me saying, and she deserves it actually for some of what she has done in the Parliament with respect to Muslim women. But you know, again, you can get things off your chest, but you can also, you know, show people for the ridiculousness. Where else is this material coming from? Is it just whatever you see that deserves the mocking it deserves?
Well, I don't really go into politics. I'm not a political comedian. I don't do much about politics. That's probably my only political joke, Pauline Hanson, and only because she's an easy target. Otherwise, I know nothing about politics. I think it all comes from just stereotypes and what people assume and what people think. And, you know, it's just the way I see things of what's happening. That's where all the jokes are coming from. Everyday life, things that people say to me, you know, things I observe. That's where it all comes from. I just think I'm weird. I don't know. I just see things differently.
You do mention that it's not even binary, the stereotyping that can happen. You're an Australian first. You keep saying that. You keep making that clear. You have Lebanese heritage, right? Your parents were immigrants from Lebanon. You're a Muslim woman. And you find yourself torn, and I've heard this from so many people, you can find yourself torn between all these identities and people's presumptions about all of them. And is that another thing you're fighting back against or making sense of through your art?
Yeah, that's a real tough one, you know, as I say that, you know, if I went to Lebanon, I think that they'll just say I'm Australian. And then when I come to Australia, they say that I'm Lebanese. It's like, bro, where do I live? Like, where am I from? And, yeah, it's happened to everyone. It's happened to every nationality and everyone goes through with it. And it's just got to it's got to stop in a way, you know. Australians have to be more accepting. I think they are. They're coming around more accepting that we're born here and we are Australian. It's not you're white and you on the first fleet that you're automatically Australian. No. So yeah, it is a tough one. There's a lot of people I've met have gone through the same thing and always say thank you for talking about it and bringing it up and bringing awareness.
It's interesting about the humour because the ribbing of each other is so natural and so normal and so healthy, and yet we're also worried about when that becomes offensive. And do you find a lot of your European audience is more in shock at the joke you've made than, you know, than anyone else? Do they, again, just underestimate that everyone laughs about themselves and their own families and their own culture?
I think the Europeans are great, and I think the people I struggle with is more of the woke hipster type of community, the inner city community that are like, oh, you can't talk about racism and don't be like this. It's like, you know nothing. You know nothing about what we've all gone through. I can say whatever I want. I think they're the hard ones because they just want to brush it under the carpet and just like, no, we're not going to be racist anymore. We're going to be good people and everyone is equal. But I don't think so. I think you need to talk about it. You know, it needs to come out. You can't just hide it.
So
Europeans are fine.
So is it not that they're offended on your behalf? It's that they're confronted by what your humour is revealing.
Yeah, and they feel like I'm being racist. Like, I did a joke. I didn't even do a joke. I was just asking an audience member. I said, oh, you got an accent. Where are you from? And then someone behind her huffed and puffed and went, that's a bit rude. I said, you're Asian. Like, why is that rude? And he goes, you can't ask someone where they're from. I go, she has an accent. Obviously, she does not come from Blacktown, like that's where I was performing. And I was like, what's so bad? Like, there's so many things that you can't say or do anymore. It's like, and these people are trying to fight racism and try to stop all this stuff. It's like, I wasn't even being racist. It's, I don't know, they just have this weird way of assuming that what you say is racism.
There are the rules, and you follow the rules, and you follow the rules exactly until the rules change, I guess. Have you had pushback from within?
I don't follow the rules.
Yeah, no, and I'm curious about that. It's just you, right? You've just never been a rule follower. You're not interested in them, whosever rules they are.
Yeah, pretty much. Look, the law, yes, of course. But things like that about your opinion, I don't think we should. I don't like shutting people up, right? And I don't like people shutting me up. If you have an opinion, say it. Do you know what I mean? And it might be wrong, it might be right, but the only way to know and to fix whatever could be wrong is to hear it and to correct it. But yeah, I just don't think people controlling what you say and what you do is the right thing to do.
Have you had pushback from within the Muslim community over any of it at all? Any of the jokes or, you know, because I imagine, again, everyone feels the need to protect Frieda, perhaps. And in fact, they're doing no such thing. It's just another form of assumption making to say, oh, it must be offending someone. Is it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I cop it all the time. And yes, there's a lot of people. Well, you know, there's probably around 2% of the community that dislike me because I'm outspoken. But I mean, that just gives me more material to write about. And I think people are, I think it was earlier on because they didn't really understand or know what I was doing. And now they've realized that I don't shut up and I'm going to keep going and I am their Muslim comedian and I'm here to stay. And I think people are like, yeah, yeah, we know her. So, and I, and like my donut shop's like right in the middle of the community. Everyone knows me and I don't hide it. So I think now that they know me personally, I think things are getting much better. But yeah, I copped it at the start, you know, really badly.
That never is going to cause you to recoil, though. Like, is that just, and I don't know if this goes back again to childhood, and we're all children in grown-up bodies, aren't we? And whatever happened to us back then and whatever we became back then pretty much is us now with a few bit of panel beating done. But it was never going to put you off.
Never. And I don't think... A comedy is such a craft, like it's such an art form. And my dad said to me, he goes, give up everything and never give up comedy. Like, and, you know, having that assurance from your father, like I'll never, ever give it up. I think it's like one of the most powerful positions I can be in for my community and for every female out there and for every other person that's out there. I think it's so powerful and I'd never, ever give it up. Like there's no way I'll die with that microphone in my hand.
There is one person though who's, you know, still asking you to give it up and I think that hurts a lot, yeah? Your mum's never been keen.
Yeah, my mum's never keen and I think, well, since I got divorced, I think she's like backed off now and she's like, whatever makes you happy. And she doesn't really talk about it that much. And I think it's because she doesn't understand, you know, what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And there's a lot of people that tell her all these stupid stories. But, I mean, she always asks me to translate jokes for her. And I just translate. I just say something else. I didn't even tell her the real joke. Like, yeah, but, like, only yesterday I was in a writer's room on my laptop on Zoom. And she just let me do it. And she's like, oh, yeah, you had a meeting. I'm like, yeah. And she just knows that that's my passion. She knows that I'll never let it go. And I think she'll come around. She'll eventually come around. I think she gets a lot that, oh, is your daughter the comedian? So I think she's starting to go, oh, okay, this is pretty cool.
Tell me about the donut shop and its role. I love that it's right in the middle of the community and therefore will be the centre, undoubtedly, of interaction. But was that always, again, we know the cooking was a passion, but what was the plan for the shop in the first instance? What was the, I need to add this extra workload to my workload?
Well, I wanted to change businesses and my business wasn't going very good and I had probably hit rock bottom again. And I think when you're at your lowest point, the ideas that come to you are phenomenal. And I think that's anyone in business or anyone that's at their lowest point right now, trust me that, you know, at the end of the rainbow, there is a pot of gold. And I think I just had that faith and I just went, I had a dream of the donut, and then I acted on it instantly the next day, and I started making donuts. And now I've become like one of the best donut shops in Sydney, and it is really good that it is in the middle of the community, because I know that the community are proud to have, you know, the best donut shop in Sydney, and to know that, you know, a Muslim female is the one that runs it and makes all these creations. And I think they're really proud of me, a lot of them, because I, you know, they're proud that this, there's this donut shop. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. People come from everywhere to try these American donuts. And I went to America and I was invited, and I learned how to make these donuts from the guy that taught Dunkin' Donuts and Randy's Donuts, and all those big places taught me. So I have an American donut shop.
So Frida's going to be the next franchise, I take it, yeah? Frida's Donuts.
Oh, I don't know. It's people talk about it, but one step at a time, I think.
Hey, what's the role of boxing in your life, dare I ask? Is it another much-loved outlet?
Oh, yeah, I love my boxing, and everyone I box with is from New Zealand.
There you go.
Yeah.
Say with me, yeah, New Zealand. Say it with me, New Zealand.
New Zealand. Yeah, everyone's an islander, Polynesian in there. I love it. Like, it's become like, and I was so lazy. Like, I was never fit, overweight, lost 30 kilos now. Jeez. And yeah, so I box like 6 days a week and want to become a boxer, like an amateur boxer. But yeah, so, and I've, it's really amazing sport. Because you don't have to run that much.
Say again?
Oh. I said you don't have to run that much.
Yeah, true, true. It's an extra tool in your kit if any hectares get out of hand. I think those kids are going to get off to school. It's been lovely talking to you, Frida. It's been great fun.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Frida DeGuise. Australia's, as we said, she believes she's the only Muslim hijab-wearing comedian, as far as she's aware. Force of nature, donut maker.